We want to welcome you today to Mission Sunday. We appreciate your presence, members and visitors. We will be reading from 1 Corinthians 12 in our opening text here this morning. And although we have a guest speaker, and we consider him a guest speaker, he's a homegrown guest speaker. And we want to welcome Neil and his family, who are home from Cambodia, to here to us this morning. When we think of missions, the mission committee, we can do nothing without yous, honestly. We have no resources. We can really do nothing. But when you think about it, even broader than that, praise God for the missionary who witnessed to our families generations ago. And that's the reason we're sitting here today. So for Neil and Darla and their family and other families who are have answered the call to go out there, they're doing something that generations from now, those people may be sitting in a church just like this, worshiping God. Because somebody is out there being a missionary. But that don't let us off the hook. You know, this the statement, you're either a missionary or the mission. So we each have a part in this. We want to welcome you to the whole Sunday here today. After the Sunday school and the morning service, there will be a fellowship meal in the woods up here. You're all welcome. Please come. And for yous here today, I plead for you to come back this evening. We have another special guest, Brian Warner, who's with Grace Press. And he will be having a presentation this evening for what Grace Press is doing. Another mission outreach, global mission outreach. So you're not caught off guard for the evening service. We will be lifting an offering afterwards, so just so you would know that. So we're going to read out of 1 Corinthians 12. We're going to start at verse 4 and read to verse 20. Now there are diversities of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are differences of administration, but the same Lord. And there are diversities of operations, but it is the same God which worketh all in all. But the manifestation of the Spirit is given to every man to profit withal. For to one is given by the Spirit the word of wisdom, to another the word of knowledge by the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another the gifts of healing by the same Spirit, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy, to another discerning of spirits, to another diverse kinds of tongues, to another the interpretation of tongues. But all these worketh that one and the selfsame Spirit, dividing to every man severally as he will. For as the body is one and hath many members, and all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit are we all baptized into one body, whether we be Jews or Gentiles, whether we be bond or free, and have been all made to drink into one Spirit. For the body is not one member, but many. If the foot shall say, because I am not the hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear shall say, because I am not the eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where were the hearing? If the whole body were hearing, where were the smelling? But now hath God set the members, every one of them, in the body, as it hath pleased him. And if they were all one member, where were the body? But now are they many members, yet one body. For all who can, please kneel for prayer. Brother Neil, there you are.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me to come and share. And thank you, Henry, for opening and for reading that scripture. The last year has probably been the busiest year of our lives, and it's been a challenging year, but in the middle of that, we've really seen a lot of victories and we've seen God move. But when we've seen those victories, it's because there's been a body around us, both supporters on this side of the world praying and giving, but also God brought people into our lives in Cambodia who were a big help and had gifts that we didn't have, which really contributed to the success of some of our ministry in the last year. So that the verses about us being a body and having different roles have really become very real to me in the last year, and we've really experienced it in just a very tangible way. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about that scripture, but as we go here, I think you'll see that the people we've been able to work with were such a key part of our ministry, and we've just been reminded again that, you know, our ministry is not our work, and it's not about what we want to do, but it's God's work, and He has gifted many people and brought them together to accomplish His will in Cambodia. I'm going to try to give a presentation of the last year and everything that happened. I didn't put it in chronological order necessarily because there was a lot happening at the same time, and it would be sort of confusing. So I'm going to talk about a few different things as we go, but to start out here, this is GTO. This is the Asia field staff as of February. We have an annual retreat in Thailand every year. And this is our current team. Travis and Krista Hertzler moved over in January, and they're in Siem Reap studying language. And Becca Stoner is also still in Siem Reap, working with local ministries and continuing language study. Our team vision, which we came up with before we moved almost 4 years ago, is to see the unreached peoples of Cambodia loving and worshiping Jesus and proclaiming His glory. And basically what that means is we want to see unreached people get to the point where they don't need Western missionaries, where they have their own leadership and they're faithfully serving Jesus and reaching out to other people in Cambodia. As far as our team, right now, God has led us to the Khrao people in Eastern Cambodia, and it's not really clear where our teammates will end up. They plan to move to our province. That's sort of the next step when they're done with language study. But by the time they get there, we're not sure what opportunities there will be among the Khrao, if there will still be a need for foreign workers, or we have some other ideas and we see other needs in the province that they may pursue. So the next step is to just get our team established in Croce province so that we can learn the needs that exist there and how we fit into what God's doing there. And I also forgot to mention that we have another family joining us this coming January, Keith and Juanita Weaver from Tidings of Peace. And they will also begin with language study. So now, getting into the last year, I spoke here a little over a year ago, and the end of June, when we went to fly back, a border tension rose up between Thailand and Cambodia, and the land border closed, which was how we were going to get back. So we had to buy an additional flight, but the border tensions kept escalating way beyond what we expected. And then Thailand opened fire with heavy artillery in early July of last year. And they were doing drone strikes. And there was about 250,000 displaced people in July. And it came as a huge surprise. And organizations weren't prepared. The government wasn't prepared. And suddenly there's hundreds of thousands of people that are fleeing away from the border regions. And so almost as soon as we got back, we got pulled into helping with that. We started looking for ways to help. And we connected with some local brothers who were doing food distribution. Some of the guys in this photo are salt facilitators. So they run the salt program under CAM, which is a savings program. And so their savings groups raised money and they were buying food. And they also had a lot of connections with churches in the border regions. And so we traveled around to bring food and medical supplies and give encouragement to the churches that were there serving refugees. Some of the camps, they just kind of sprung up overnight. I think this one had about 20,000 people in. So there was just tremendous physical needs, but then also a lot of the older people, it really brought up a lot of PTSD from the genocide and the civil war in the 80s and 90s. So it was a really hard time for the people of Cambodia. So we worked with these local Christians for about a week. We just filled our truck every day with food and supplies, and we would coordinate with pastors near the refugee camps or in the border areas. And after about a week, the government got on top of things, and some of the bigger organizations, the UN and some large Christian organizations, really got organized with bringing food relief. And they even set up schools in some of the refugee camps so that the children could continue education and have something to do. So when the need wasn't as urgent, we stopped helping because it felt like we were just getting in the way at that point. But it was a tremendous privilege to work under local Christians rather than be seen as the foreign missionary who's bringing help. We were just kind of serving them. We just had a vehicle and we had time, and we were able to serve in that way and see how the Cambodian Christians responded to a crisis and how they reached out to their own people. We really learned a lot through that. And last year I talked about the butcher business, which started a bit by accident, just making bacon, and people tasted it and wanted to buy it, and that grew. And over the last few years, we became good friends with Isaac and Megan. For security reasons, I won't share their last names, but they are the directors of an organization called PCL. It stands for People for Care and Learning. And it's a humanitarian organization. But they also do a lot of discipleship and church planting and business as mission. And two of their businesses are restaurants that target the tourism industry. And so I was providing their restaurants with ham and bacon for about a year. And they also have a teaching farm, an experimental farm where they teach agriculture in a village about 45 minutes outside of Siem Reap. And I went to visit the farm and I was impressed. They had really nice animals. And I said, Isaac, this is crazy that you're paying me to process meat when you have good animals here. I said, I'll teach your staff and you can kill and process your own animals and provide products to your own restaurants. And he said, well, that's been a dream of mine for years. And he was excited. And so we talked and came up with an agreement that I would train his staff and they would take the northern half of the country. And when we moved out to the Crow area, we would have a butcher shop too. And we would market in the southern half of the country. And so I started training the PCL staff. I had three guys and they came to our house a couple days a week when we were still doing the business in our house. And in July and August, I trained them at our house. And then we also were designing a butcher shop to build out next to the farm. So this was PCL's project. They raised the funds for it. And two of the PCL staff especially really were excited about it and really got a hold of the vision and ran with it. One of them, this guy here, his name's Voot. He's 44 years old. He's been a Christian a long time. Really solid guy and really good with his hands. So he quickly became a better butcher than I ever will be. And the younger guy there, his face is turned away, but his name's Philip. He grew up in a PCL orphanage, and he got a business degree. He's just really done well, and really has a passion to use business as mission. So he's managing the business end, and Voot is running the day-to-day. And I think it was around August we started killing pigs from the PCL farm. Before, I was just buying meat from the local market and processing it. And this is PCL's farm. They do regenerative agriculture, so building up the soil with organic matter, no chemical fertilizers. And they wanted to show that you can be successful with a small family farm. They grow their own feed, make their own feed for cattle and pigs and chickens. And they owned land next to the farm, and so that's where we built the butcher shop. And as we're in the planning phase, Philip and Isaac and I all felt like if we're going to put the money into a building, we want to do it right and we want to plan to expand. And so the project grew quite a bit as we were designing and building. And on killing days, all the local villagers would come, and anything that we didn't use would be cooked up for lunch. So these guys really have done well. They, they never had American meat products before, but once I showed them what to do, they really raised the standard. They improved our packaging and labeling and have just kept consistent high quality, and the business continues to grow. So where's my pointer here? Okay, so this is Isaac, the director of PCL. The other guys are PCL farm staff. And this guy here, his name's Steve Roney, I believe. He's a Christian veterinarian. He's semi-retired now, but he's one of the top two or three people in the U.S. for animal disease. And he offered to come and inspect our shop, watch us kill, watch us process, and give us a letter stating that we were up to standard. And so he did that. He was at the shop for 2 days. And really, really an incredible guy. He gave us a lot of practical pointers, and he had worked his way through veterinary school at a slaughterhouse, so he had a lot of experience too. And after observing us for 2 days, he wrote a letter stating that we exceed USDA standards. which is, we're probably the first business in Cambodia to do that. I'm not sure, but, and even though that doesn't necessarily mean anything in Cambodia, that document could be really helpful to get us into high-end, like hotels and restaurants. Just having a stamp from a Western organization stating that we exceed USDA standards should be really helpful. And then in March, Alex came over to teach us how to kill and process big animals. So we did some cattle and some buffalo. So that's Philip, that's the manager. And also, yeah, around March, we opened a retail location in one of PCL's restaurants. So they named it Big Lake Meat Company. That's Big Lake is a translation of the village where the butcher shop is. So we have a retail location, and we're selling to 4 restaurants and also shipping meat down to Phnom Penh. So I was, I don't know, it felt like just a privilege to be a part of this shop and give it to PCL. We were really impressed with how PCL invested in their staff for the long term and actually trained them and got men of character and leadership. And we were just impressed with the churches that they had planted and the ministries that they were running. So that's why we started the business, was for it to be used to disciple people and build the kingdom of God. And we were confident that PCL would use it that way. So in the meantime, we set a moving date for January to move out of Siem Reap. And so we were sort of scrambling to pass off the business and get everything passed over so that it wasn't dependent on me. And then in December, the border conflict escalated again. And this time it was a lot worse. Thailand was doing airstrikes with F-16s. There was at one point over 600,000 people displaced. And they were bombing over 40 or 50 miles inside the border. We never knew where they were going to hit. Like every day we'd see the news and they would strike a different area. They even struck as far in as Siem Reap province. So all of the refugees were just pouring towards Siem Reap because that's about 60 miles from the border on the north and the west. And so they were all just like coming to us. And so this time I worked with PCL because they had funds for food, but they didn't have enough trucks or enough drivers. And so we drove our truck and, you know, we're in the middle of passing off the business and we had, you know, restaurants depending on us. So we couldn't stop production either. So we would start at 6 in the morning at the butcher shop and get as much done as we could. And then we'd go fill up the trucks and do food distribution all afternoon. And it was amazing to see. Where are we at here? To see the Cambodian church respond again. Lots of this food, some of it was paid for by PCL. Lots of it was paid for by local churches, and they don't have a lot of money to spare. And they really just gave and helped in any way they could. we would often deliver to the Buddhist temples. That's where people would gather when they fled. They would find the local temples once they were in a safe area. And because of PCL's history in the country, they've been there over 20 years. They have connections in the government, and you know, everybody knows who they are. And so government officials would be calling Isaac and saying, hey, there's 800 families at a temple and they have no food. And so we could coordinate with where it was needed the most. And you can see that the Khmer are extremely organized. And when there's a crisis, they just learn how to work together. I think that's why they've been able to rebuild the country so well after a genocide, because they, there was nobody trying to steal food. Like, they just worked together. They helped us arrange it. And then they would have a representative from each family come and claim the pile of food then. And we always had to have lots of formalities and thanking everyone. And because of where it was, often PCL wasn't free to necessarily share the gospel openly. And usually all we could say was that we were a Christian organization. But it seemed like God actually used that, where people could see that we were giving with no strings attached. We were helping Christians and Buddhists. It wasn't like we were just helping certain people. And some really amazing things happened. We had government officials and even Buddhist monks publicly thanking God for God's work through the Cambodian Christians. And it was even on the news that the Cambodian churches were the most helpful in bringing relief, even more helpful than the UN and, you know, the big organizations with lots of money. It was small local churches that brought the most relief. So it was, I think it was mostly 2 weeks that we were running every day. And then we cut back to just several days a week. And in the meantime, during all of this, we were still making trips out to the Crow Village. And yeah, whenever we would go out, we would stay with Philip and Kim. They're the Wycliffe translators that are also working with the Crow. They're good friends, and we really couldn't have accomplished what we have without them. 2 years ago in July, they baptized the first seven Crow believers, and I think I shared that here last year. So they are leading that church as well as keeping the translation project moving. So we went out in July of last year. That's Philip and Kim's house. And we asked permission to rent a house and to run the meat business there. And we received a very definite no. And so it sort of brought up some questions about what was that, a completely closed door? And at one point we even thought maybe the butcher shop was what God wanted us there for, and we should just pass off the business and our time was done. But it really felt like God was bringing more teammates, and like he still had something for us in Cambodia. And so we decided to do one more trip to the village, and also in the same trip go to Krache City, the capital of the province. And we chose that province initially because there's so little work being done. There's almost no foreign workers, and it's very few Christians. And so we thought, well, maybe we should just move to Krache City, and we could even work with tribal minorities there. as they come into town for education and work. And we're not sure why, besides that we had lots of people praying, but the government leaders just completely changed their stance. But they asked that we teach English and not run a business. And so we agreed to that. We initially, I was not excited about that. But I talked to several people, and especially Isaac. When he started the farm, he said that the government wouldn't let him do it, but they let him teach English. And many of the kids that he taught English to 15 years ago are now leaders in their organization. And he said it just, everybody saw that they wanted to bring something of value and saw that they didn't have selfish motives, and they accepted them, and eventually they were able to start the farm. But to this day, if you ask anybody in that village what Isaac did for them, they'll say, oh, he taught my kids English. They really appreciate that. So it also will buy us a little bit of time to figure out what the needs are and how we can best meet them. We still feel like we would like to use business as a platform, but we're holding that with a very open hand. Some of these pictures are from the church that meets under Philip and Kim's house. So one of the original believers passed away. So now there's six that have been baptized, and some of their relatives attend church. So there would be maybe 8 or 9 crowd that would call themselves Christian. And they're obviously at various places in their journeys with God. So once we got permission, we moved to Grocha City in January, because the village is 7 hours from Siem Reap, and Grocha City is only 2 hours away. So we moved there so that we were in the provincial capital to get paperwork done and work on our village house. We found a house and signed a 10-year contract on it, and we did lots of paperwork. This was moving out of Siem Reap. So it's about 5.5 to 6 hours from Siem Reap to Grocha City. And we found a house that was really inexpensive, and it was cheaper and easier than doing one move straight from Siem Reap to the village. We just kind of landed there for 3 months. And some friends from another organization helped us move. And so Grocha is right on the Mekong River. It's really beautiful. We really liked living there. And our boys made friends with neighbor kids pretty quick. And we also got connected with a local church in Grocha City. And so we attended there every Sunday when we lived in Grocha. And I'm going to have to keep moving here. I'll try to allow a little bit of time for questions at the end. So we hired local carpenters to put an addition on the house, and we had to figure out water filtration and upgrade the electrical and all of that. So while we lived in Grocha, I was making day trips out to the village, or sometimes I would stay at Philip and Kim's house for a night or two and work on the house. And we were able to move out April 28th, which is like 4 weeks before we came back to the States. This was doing paperwork in the local government office. Philip was a big help. He can speak Khmer and Krao fluently. So the village is about 2 hours northeast of Grocha City. About an hour of that is on dirt roads. And on lots of our trips to the village, we would have to wait for the government guys to get space in their schedule to talk about our paperwork. And so we would just visit the church members or play in the river or wait around. And then he'd call us and say, okay, I'm free now. You need to come right now. And we'd run up to the government offices. And lots of this I shared last year, but the Crow are mostly subsistence farmers, or they just forage and do whatever they can to make a living. They dig for gold, they hunt wild pigs, they forage in the jungle. And they are trying to commercialize farming, but they don't know how to do that, and they have no concept of money. So if they get into farming, they usually get deep into debt because they don't understand interest, and they'll take out loans from loan sharks. So there's a lot of chances there to be a help to meet the practical needs. There is about 5,000 Crow people, and I would say, I would guess that 2/3 of them can speak Khmer to some level, but Crow is still their heart language. Most of the children can speak it, and there's now schools out there, and so they're learning Khmer in school. And also there's more and more cell phones, and so they're exposed to the outside world. And so that's the house that we rented. That was the first time that we looked at it. It's this is pretty much a typical Crow house. And so we added an addition to put a kitchen and a bathroom in, and also a storage room. And we poured concrete underneath the house because that's where I'll be teaching English to start. Okay, and so here, I would say, this is just a guess, but I would guess that about half of all the Crow people are in these two villages. So this village on this side of the river is called Ravien. This here is where Philip and Kim live. And all of the current Crow believers would live on this side of the river. And so our house is right here. This whole village is Srai Chi. It's the largest Crow village. So we're kind of on the edge here. There's like an access to lots of their fields. So we see lots of people every day coming by on their way to work. And this was moving from Gracha City out to the village. This was moving day. We moved a bit more suddenly than we were planning. It started raining, and we wanted to move before the roads got bad. And it suited our teammates to come out and help us move, and so we made quick plans and moved in, and then I continued working on the house after we got there. This would be looking out some of our windows at some of the neighbors' houses. And right at the front corner of our property, there's a little store right there in the left of the picture. And they just sell drinks and snacks. But it's kind of a public hangout place. And so there's always children there playing. There's always people stopping by. So we didn't even think about that when we rented the house, but we're really glad for that. It feels like it's very easy for us to get to know people in our community because there's always people at the store. And that was the day before we left. So I'm going to just wrap up here with prayer requests, and then if anybody has questions, pray for the future of our team. Our next step is to establish our team in Grocha province, but we're at a place where we can't really guarantee that they can join us in the village. Like, paperwork is complicated. They may not give permission for more foreigners to move out. And so just pray that our teammates would have personal vision for what God has for them, and that we would be able to lead the team well in spite of being 7 hours away now and 2 hours away later once they get established. And pray for the English classes. They'll begin in August. And I've never taught English more than a time or two, so it's going to be a new experience. Just pray that that could be a blessing to the community, and we could really get to know the community and get into our neighborhood through that. And pray that we can start off well in the village. I mean, we've been there 4 weeks, but really we haven't even met most of our neighbors yet. And it really feels like how we start out and how we're received is really critical for the future. Okay, I think that's all I have to share. If there's any questions, I'll take questions, and hopefully we can chat more afterwards as well if you have more questions.
I was thinking about, we raise our missionaries. Who taught you to butcher meat? You don't have to say for security reasons.
Yeah, I am. There's not a day that goes by that I'm not thankful for my upbringing and the carpentry skills and growing up around the meat business. I still had a lot to learn, but I felt like I was off to a good start and at least knew what good products should taste like.
You kind of alluded to it, but the Grau Center up the road in Bowman.
They elect their own village chiefs, but then there's also like the commune chief. A commune is a larger unit. It would have several villages in it. So that's set up by the federal government, but there are Crow people in office. Yeah.
Can you share something from the native language?
From Crow, I can't. From Khmer, yes. So they would greet, a respectful greeting like in church would be Chum Rip Sua. You would especially do that to older people. It would be very rude to not do that. And the height of your hands is shows how much honor you're giving that person. So a pastor, you would do it up high. A peer, you would do it down here. Anything else? All right, thank you. God bless you.
Well, thank you, Neil, for that presentation. It really made me think that when I said he was homegrown but a visitor, we don't know what our children are going to do in the future. And your question was legitimate, We are prepping future missionaries. We are prepping future fathers and mothers. And people, they may not stay here. Maybe they'll go somewhere else, but we're prepping them. And I thought that was interesting. We thank you. We're going to turn it over now for the preaching hour. We invite you back next week again for 9:30 for Sunday school. We'll be back in Colossians, starting a regular schedule there. So, thank you again for coming, and thank you, Neil, for your presentation.